didn't save the box and the charger. Tom takes a cigarette.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That makes sense. Oh, well.
Oh, well. Yeah, what's the Siri bug? So if I ask it what the weather is, let's see if this does that. Okay. What's the weather? Didn't crash. How do I make this happen? Okay, let's start the recording. So, yeah, so there's this Apple Watch Siri bug. But I don't, it's not bugging. Let me read about it and see what I need to do to get it to trigger it. Asking Siri, like, what's the weather, causes the Apple Watch to crash. Well, no. What's the temperature outside?
It's currently 57 degrees.
Well, no, it didn't break. Hey, Siri, what's the weather?
The weather's looking good today, up to 60 degrees.
Well, Mommy, I think it's all right now. It doesn't seem to be a problem.
Oh, it was a daylight saving bug. So if I'd have to ask it before the clock changed. Now what?
You're
live. Oh, I'm sorry. I was playing with my Apple Watch. Hey, everybody, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. My apologies. I was trying to get this Apple Watch to crash because I read that if you asked it, well, let me try again. What's the weather? If you asked it what the weather was, it would crash.
Nice today.
But it doesn't. Apparently in a daylight bug. Daylight saving bug. Hello, everybody. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo is the number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. See, it snuck up on me. I thought it was an hour. Oh, no, that wouldn't make sense, would it? Because it should be noon, shouldn't it? it's fun. This clock change thing, bad idea. We talk about it every year. Someday we're going to abandon this. I'm told in the beautiful Republic of Hawaii, they don't do it. Maybe it's time to move to Hawaii. 8888, Ask Leo, the phone number. I've been playing with a number of things. I did get, and I talked about it on the last show, but just in case you weren't listening, I know you don't listen to every show. It's okay. I forgive you. I was talking about the iPhone X. I'll give you the skinny, the TLDR, as the kids say. Too long, didn't read. Bottom line, wow. I didn't expect to like it this much. I really didn't. The new iPhone X has a very nice screen. I've played with OLED screens for years. I mean, after all, I use a Samsung Galaxy Note. I've used that for years, a Samsung Galaxy S. When did they start doing OLED? Right from the beginning, right? S1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8. So it's not like I've never seen one of these. But Apple, and they did get this screen from Samsung, but Apple apparently did their own thing. They told Samsung how to make the screen. One of the things they're kind of crowing about is, and we told them not to do burn-in. No burn-in on this screen. Or as Google calls it, differential aging. Google's having all sorts of problems with the OLED screens it got from LG. Not this screen. Man, this screen is gorgeous. The phone feels good. I was ready to hate that notch at the top. You know, that notch didn't bother me. You get used to it. You don't see it a lot of the times. And when you do, it's like, yeah, there's a notch. Big deal. Face recognition. Face ID. It works nicely when it doesn't work. And occasionally in odd lighting situations, mostly, it doesn't work. But it works so quickly and easily and transparently. That sometimes you just forget that you had to unlock the phone. It just does it. And most of the time it's that. And when it doesn't unlock because of the weird lighting conditions, you enter a six-digit PIN, and boom, you're in, which I don't mind. And it does seem to learn. It does seem to learn. So, you know what, Apple, you did a great job. The edge-to-edge screen means that the phone is smaller in the hand, but the screen itself is, technically, you know, Apple says it's a 5.8 inches, which is bigger than the iPhone 7 Plus or 8 Plus, which is a 5.5 inch screen. But that's only if you measure it diagonally. And because of the Face ID and the UI, the new UI, the notch at the top, the stuff they have to put at the bottom to remind you there's no home button, you got to slide it up. Because of that, you don't really get as much screen real estate. So you kind of have to carve out a little bit at the top, a little bit at the bottom. So it's a little smaller, actually, in reusable size to the iPhone 8 Plus or 7 Plus. But it's bigger than the 8 or 7, the little one. So I think it's just actually right. It's just right. It's perfect. I hate to say that. You know, I admit it, I wanted to ding this phone. It was so, the only thing I can find wrong, okay? I will tell you the things I've found wrong with this phone. I've only had it for a couple of days now. Although, I have been playing with my precious quite a bit. Even in the middle of the night. have you ever do that with a new phone? Where you just, you know, you got a new phone and you wake up and you can't stop playing with it? Glad Bill Handel's not here to come up with some nasty joke, I'm sure. But the phone, two things wrong with it. It still doesn't have a headphone jack. I can live with that. Got the AirPods, you know, it's okay. I got the adapters. Bought a bunch of them last time. So, you know, and they're all over the place. And it's really, really expensive. And in a way, I hate to say, this is why I didn't want to say good things. I wanted to say, oh, don't worry about this phone. You don't need it. It's not that good. It's, you know, it's, I really wanted to be able to tell people you don't need to spend the $1,000+ for this phone. And you don't. I mean, you don't. You don't. If you have a 6, a 6S, you don't. If you have a, there's lots of great phones. You don't need this phone. But I'm glad I spent $1,150 on it. It's kind of breathtakingly expensive, but it just feels good. It works. It's got a great screen. Man, don't drop it. I don't buy Apple Care Plus because it's expensive. I believe in self-insuring, but maybe this is the time to buy Apple Care Plus because if you crack the screen, you need a new screen. That's $260. And any other repair, Apple says, any other repair besides the screen is $500. Starts at $500-some. So if you crack the back, for instance, $500. So I got this thing in a giant case with a cover. I'm not going to, if I drop this and break it, it's too expensive to replace. So that's, I wanted to hate it. Because I wanted to be able to come to you and say you don't need it, you don't get it. If you're in the market for a new iPhone and you can see your way clear to spending a lot of money, it's worth it. It's worth it. Now, I still don't have the new Google phone, the Pixel 2 XL. I get that in a couple of weeks because I got a weird color combination that's not in stock. But I'll let you know. But judging from what I've seen of our friend Jason Howell has it, and his looks terrible. And I went to the Verizon store and played with it. The screen is not very good. It's an OLED screen, but not as good as this one that Apple made. So they did it. They did it. And you know what's amazing? People, Apple's, according to their quarterly results, sold the iPhone 8 better than any phone before. And they're going to do the same with this. This company can't not make money. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, no, no, no. Time to talk high tech. Kim Schaffer is here. Were you here an hour early? I was here early, Kim Schaffer, and this was ridiculous. I don't like this at all. I got here early.
You did get here early.
And it confused me.
To see your car outside.
Well, and it confused me because then I forgot that the radio show started.
And I couldn't do anything about it. Because
you were
I
sitting there watching me make a fool of myself.
I didn't hear the music.
No, I had it turned off. Don't get here. See, okay, so should we give people the inside scoop on Leo? He gets here 30 seconds before the show begins. He walks in, right?
Very true.
Yeah.
Usually.
And now you know why. Because if I get here too early, I get cocky. I get complacent. I lose track of what time it is. I hate this clock thing. We've got to stop this.
Yeah, I don't know why we do it.
Stop the insanity.
I didn't get here an hour early. But I also woke up earlier than I wanted to.
Well, that's
to,
what so. Happened is I was up and I thought, well, I might as well go to work.
Yeah.
Not doing anything, playing video games here. So you, thank goodness, you did get here on time, and you've picked up the line, and people have been calling. I don't know why. I guess they want to talk to me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And since the iPhone 10 is all the rage right
let's
now,
let's do it.
Patrick in Lafayette has a couple questions about that.
Yeah. Yeah. I this was not easy getting an iPhone 10. Let me tell you, this involves getting up late at night and more. Patrick Lafayette, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thank you, Kim. Hello, Patrick.
How you doing, Leo?
I am well, sir.
I tell you what, when I get time on Sundays, I'll listen to you when between football games and stuff. But today, you're really cracking me up about this iPhone 10. This is funny. I mean, you crack me up on
this. Why am I cracking you up? What's funny about it? Well, now, what, I'm not intentionally funny. Did I wanted to hate it? Is that what cracks you up?
Listen. Yeah, listen. If we actually take that expensive phone you have...
I know. I'm so embarrassed to have this phone. It's too expensive.
If we take it and we do a drop test...
No!
With my Moto Z4.
Oh, yeah. Your Z4 should be fine. Yeah.
We'll do the drop test 50 times from a 12-foot lateral concrete.
You won't have to. This iPhone will break the first time. Are you kidding? You look at it funny. The thing will crack.
You know, I just don't see spending that kind of money.
I agree with
you. Android will do everything that phone will do.
So really, that's true about, let's use cars as an analogy, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You can buy a Pinto, and it will do it's got four wheels, a brake, a gas pedal.
Right.
It'll do everything a Ferrari will do, a little slower maybe, but essentially it's completely functional. And I think this is a luxury device. And I think one of the things we really have to acknowledge about Apple is that they're a luxury device maker. They're a Louis Vuitton. They're a Pierre Cardin.
Yeah.
They make fancy stuff at high prices.
You know, I tell all my friends that have iPhones, I said, you know what? That's a girl's phone.
Now I'm laughing.
That's a girl.
Wait a minute. Let me check. No, I'm wearing pants. It's
a girl phone.
It's a girly phone. Well, I don't know if that's fair. You know what really is the truth? It's a tech fetish thing.
Right.
If you're really into technology and you fetishize it and you say my life is going to be better if I have the shiny new thing and I can't wait. It's not going to, it probably isn't going to make phone calls as well as your Z Force, frankly.
Right.
Android is far more customizable. I think the iPhone probably is more secure. I'm still concerned about Android security, especially if you don't get those security patches. But that's more of a theoretical threat than a realistic threat, right? Although a million people downloaded a phony WhatsApp that was on the Google Play Store, right? That was not, didn't happen to anybody owning an Apple phone. So I don't want to carry water for Apple. I think they make very expensive products. They're a fashion company as much as a technology company. But when they make a good product, it would be biased of me not to acknowledge that they've made a good product, and they have.
And then they're copying technology Android had for years.
Oh, I agree. I agree. Apple finally had to put notifications in, and they don't do it as well as Android does. Android allows you to customize the user interface, the front page, in some very nice ways. And Apple, all you get is a grid of icons, you know. And you better like
not only that, but with Android, look at the devices that you buy today.
You have choice.
With Android technology.
You have choice.
I mean, everything is going with Android today. You have built-in stereo systems in trucks and cars.
Right.
It's all Android-based. TVs.
Well, there's a reason for that. Stereo. And Apple does not give away its operating system. Google does. It's free.
Mm.
So there is a reason for that. Oh. And it's one of the reasons, actually, Android's less secure, because anybody can make an Android device, and there's no guarantee that that's going to get updated. Apple says, no, you can't have iOS. Only we can make iOS. And furthermore, a phone company, if you want to sell an iOS phone, you have to let us update it whenever we gosh darn well want to. So I understand, and I think one of the reasons I really wanted to find flaws in this phone is I'm embarrassed to tell people this is a, you know, this $1,150 phone. I'm embarrassed to say I bought it, and I'm embarrassed to say it's good, and I even think it's worth it. However,
yeah.
if you, I don't think you have to have it, and I understand. Now, let me ask, what kind of truck you drive?
Well, I have two work trucks. Well, that's three trucks, actually.
Okay.
They're all Ford.
Okay.
They're all Ford.
Okay. You got an F-150, a modern Ford?
I got a 2017 F-150, okay. And I got two 2007 F-250 diesels.
Okay. So now you're going to justify it because I need it for work, right?
Mm-hmm.
I use it. It's a work truck for me. But you bought a pretty nice truck.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You paid a little bit more for that truck. So some people are truck peoples. And some people are phone people. And look, we live in a consumer economy, and thank goodness you and I, Frank, Patrick, we're doing our job spending money to keep this economy rolling along.
Yes. You're right about that.
Hey, it's really great to talk to you, Patrick. I love Lafayette, one of my favorite regions of the country. When is the Crawfish Festival coming? Pretty soon?
Well, actually, it was right at springtime. It was in April.
And so I'm going to come.
It'll be till April again.
I'm coming in April. Save some of that hot sauce for me, okay?
I'll tell you what, it's good.
I love it. It's great to talk to you, Patrick.
Good.
Yeah, you know, okay, see, I got him. I busted him. I had a feeling. I knew. I could tell. He has some nice trucks. And so it's kind of like that. It's less expensive than a vehicle, right? Some people are Pinto people, some people are F-250s diesel people, and some people are iPhone 10 people. It is embarrassing, though. You know, the new shiny, right? I hate to admit it. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. We'll get back to your calls in just a sec. I should have asked him how many dogs he has. This portion of the Tech Guy Show brought to you by the amazing Epson EcoTank printers. Cartridge-free printing with years of ink in the box when you buy it. It comes with years of ink. Find out more at Epson.com/EcoTank. Epson, exceed your vision. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888. Ask Leo. I have my coffee now. I think I'm okay. This time change. You'd think I'd be well-rested because you get an extra hour, right? We fall back. But it disrupted my sleep, and I got up too early, and then I got here too early, and then I... Larry in Petaluma? Hey, Larry.
How are you?
It's good to talk to you. Just down the road a piece.
Just down the road. Actually, I should drop in for some of that coffee. It sounds good.
Oh, you'd be more than welcome. I'd make you a cup if you come in.
I may show up.
Mm-hmm.
Today, I have the issue of... I've got a desktop PC running Windows 10. Had it for about a year. And I'm thinking about putting in an SSD.
Oh, yeah, you'll love it. Oh, yes.
Yeah. What I want to know is there an easy way to clone the C drive onto an SSD, or is it a
you
big
bet.
Deal?
No, it's exactly the same as any hard drive. This operating system doesn't know the difference. So the SSD will come with cloning software in most cases, or you go to the manufacturer's site. Almost all, in fact, as far as I know, all drive manufacturers offer free downloads of basic cloning software for this very reason. You get a new drive. It'll probably come with software. They'll have a link in the pamphlet there. I can't call it a manual, but the pamphlet will have a link, and you just download the software. And what it does, the idea is you want a sector by sector copy. You don't want it to be intelligent about it. You just want it to copy it sector by sector. Okay. Now, is it a desktop or a laptop?
It's a desktop.
Okay, so you can get in there and put a second drive in?
Right.
Because that's what you're going to do. You're going to make it the D drive, the second drive. Run that software, copy the C to the D. Then my suggestion would be just swap the cables or indicate somehow to the computer, depends on the computer, that you're booting now from the SSD. You've got that second drive, the original, still in there. It could either be a data drive or just think of it as a backup. In case the
Actually, it does have a small... I think it's a hybrid drive in there. Already does have a CMD drive.
So
that's what I was concerned about, because I've already got my data on the D, but I want to get everything off the C onto this new drive.
Yes.
Is that possible?
Sure. So if it is a hybrid drive, it'll look like one drive. Because the way Intel does it, Apple does it, they put a small SSD, in the case of Intel, very small. Sometimes 32 gig SSD.
That's what it is, then. Yeah, it's got 149 gigabytes. It's listed on the Windows C drive. Yeah. I don't remember it being an actual SSD, but maybe it is.
If it's a hybrid, that's what they do.
That's what it is. I think.
And then they do. I don't think they maybe they make hybrid drives that have. They might actually with some SSD on the circuit board. You know, some solid state memory on the circuit board, and then a spinning drive in the case. In either event, if it's really doing the hybrid thing, it would look like a single drive, unless you detach them, which you could do, but it came with a C and a D drive.
It came with a C and a D, and actually when I bought it, I seem to remember it was some kind of cache, SSD cache or something. I don't really remember.
Well, that's the idea of a hybrid drive is that it looks like a single drive, but the operating system or the drive is smart enough to put the stuff that you need fastest or that you access the most on the SSD and put the other stuff on the spinning drive, but it should be transparent to you. So if you see a C and a D drive, go into your storage management utility, you know, Windows Key X disk management, and look at what the actual physical drives are as well as the partitions of the drives. And that should give you some idea. It sounds like you don't have a hybrid drive. You have a single drive with two partitions, or maybe two drives. In any event, if you have a SATA cable and put this third drive in, or the second drive in, the new SSD in, it's all right if it's E. It doesn't matter. And you just clone the boot drive, which is always C in Windows. It's always the C drive.
Okay, I'm looking at the disk manager now. It says disk zero, which that's
your C drive. Yeah, that's the boot drive. Yeah.
Okay, and the Windows is on that.
Yep.
And then disk one is a Toshiba. Oh, that's an external. No, disk. That's my external, it's what just hooked up. Okay, you're right. It's one disk. It's one drive that's partitioned into C.
That's what it is. Yeah. In fact, you could clone the whole drive if you have enough room on the new SSD. Usually SSDs, because they're more expensive per gigabyte, are smaller than the spinning drives. But if you get a SSD the same size, you said it's 149, you probably will. You get a 256 gig SSD. You can clone the whole thing, and it'll still have a C partition and a D partition, because a real cloner even clones the partitioning. It doesn't look at what's going on. It just says sector one to sector one, sector two to sector two, like that. It's very mechanical.
But the D drive has 1.71 gigabyte.
Oh, okay. There you go. Well, you're not probably going to. Yeah.
So I just want to clone the C drive. I just want to clone the C drive, right? Can I just clone the C partition of that?
Is it terabyte or gigabyte? Because if it's 1.1 gigabytes, you don't care. It must be terabytes.
It says 1712.41 gigabytes.
1712. So that's 1.7 terabytes. So, and how big is the SSD? It's not going to be that big.
Yeah, I don't have the SSD yet, but the Windows is on a drive that says 150 gigabytes.
Yeah. So get it to, now you probably haven't filled up that 1.7 terabytes anyway. What you should look at is how much data you've used. If you wish, here's what I would do. I would clone the C drive to the SSD using the software provided by the disk manufacturer. Swap the cables and make the spinning drive, keep the spinning drive, unless you're getting rid of it because it's worn out.
But it's good.
It's fine. You just want a faster machine. So keep the spinning drive. Make that your D drive. Make the SSD your C drive with Windows on it. You can get rid of the Windows partition on the D drive once you've satisfied yourself that it's booting fine and it's running, you know, everything worked in the cloning process. And now you have a nice big, which is what you want, 2 terabyte data drive. That's kind of the way I like to do it, actually. The SSDs are so expensive per gigabyte. It's usually better just to put Windows and the apps on that. All your programs and Windows go on the spinning on the SSD. And the spinning drive is your data drive, your D drive. And all your documents and data can go there. And now you got lots of room for data, which is what you want.
Yeah. Okay. That was my plan. And so I'll just get a 250.
256 is plenty. Yeah.
Yeah. And then clone the Windows C drive onto that and then swap cables and then make the D and I'll expand the D to fill up the whole thing.
And because you haven't erased the D yet, if something goes wrong, you can go back and figure out what went wrong.
Great. And I have Carbonitis as
good.
A loyal.
Good. Your data's backed up. That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah. Worst case scenario, you can just because it's a Windows 10 machine, you can download from Microsoft another copy of Windows 10 and install it on that machine. It will automatically activate. So if it all goes to heck, you can just install Windows in the SSD and start fresh.
Okay, good. I didn't know if there would be any registry problems or anything like that.
No. I mean, you'd have to reinstall your apps and all that.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, big upgrade. SSDs, the solid state drives are the same kind of memory, roughly the flash memory that you use in a camera or a USB, thumb drive. They're faster. It's special memory. There's different kinds and so forth. But essentially, that's the idea. There's no moving parts. It's solid state. Initially, people were concerned that it wouldn't be as reliable or that they'd wear out faster. And that's actually not been the case. They've been very reliable. They don't wear out. I would say they're probably more reliable than anything that's moving with moving parts. A spinning disk and a head that moves around. Those physical, spinning drives are probably less reliable. And man, they're slower. An SSD is so fast that nowadays I wouldn't buy a computer with a spinning disk for the applications, for the boot. You always want to boot the operating system on an SSD. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. This is going to be a fun Sunday. We're just going to talk tech. We're just going to take calls, talk tech, all of that. Mike, Maine. Hey, Mike, good to talk to you. Leo Laporte.
Good to talk to you, too. You're doing all these time songs today.
Yes, because of Mike Cozio. He's brilliant.
The old DJ in me comes up, and the song you really need to be playing is either Marshall Crenshaw version or the original version by the Jive 5 of What Time Is It?
All right.
Listen to the clock.
And Chicago, does anybody really know what time it is?
There we go.
Time keeps on slipping into the future. I'm an old DJ, too.
Yeah, I know you are. I think I'm older than you.
Well, you probably know whether you're older than me or not. But, you can ask Siri how old I am. It's so embarrassing.
We're actually the exact same age.
Aha.
That's another story.
I got my Class 3 DJ license from the FCC, because in those days you had to have a license. In December 1976. So last year I celebrated my 40th year as a broadcaster.
Yeah, I've got mine sitting around someplace too, that little yellow card.
Yeah. Yellow. It's yellow now, believe me. Yellow with age. Fortunately, no FCC inspector will ask for it anymore, so I guess I don't really need it. What can I do for you today?
Well, I've got two questions for you, and I hope you'll have time for both. One is just a little battery-saving thing, or my iOS. I just upgraded to 11.1, and I'm very happy with it. It's working fine. Haven't noticed a lot of battery issues with it. But I'm wondering about, in the settings, many apps want you to do a background app refresh and want to keep location services on all the time. Now, I only use location services while using. I just turn that off automatically. But the background app refresh, I have that off in most everything that I don't need to have, like, email coming in or whatever to save batteries. What particular thing should I leave it on for? Or does it really make any difference?
It's not merely battery. It's a privacy issue as well, because apps can send your location back to the home office. So I think lots of people do this, and it's a good idea. Apple makes it easy because they have an actual entry in the settings for location services, and you can go app by app and deny, deny, deny. I would do it on anything that a map program you want, obviously. Although I guess you don't really care about the map program until you launch it. The thing is, if you don't have background turned on, it might take a while to figure out where you are.
So background app refresh should be kept on anything that you want.
Anything with nav, yeah. I would leave it on. There are other things that sometimes, for instance, Twitter, Google, and many social networks, Facebook, like to know where you are. It's a kind of a creepy thing when you launch Facebook and it says, hey, I see you're at the library. Would you like to share your check-in? That's a little creepy. Yeah.
I'm asking about two things. Not only the location, but background app refreshing. Two different settings.
Well, it's related because, of course, that's what it's refreshing in many cases. So if it's email, it's not refreshing location. It's downloading emails, checking the email. So, first of all, Apple does a very good job of managing the battery. So for most people, unless you are having battery issues, you probably, this is a finesse you probably don't need. In modern operating systems, you just let the thing do what it's supposed to do because it does a very good job. Apple shuts down background apps. It will ask you, as you probably notice from time to time, hey, Facebook's refreshing in the background. Do you want that? I don't let social networks refresh in the background. Always turn that off. In fact, I turn off location services for social networks. There's no benefit to that.
Great. Well, let me go to the other question then, which may be a bit more complicated. You know how we hate Auto Run, how we go into a browser, and we go to read something, and all of a sudden a video starts.
Oh, it drives me nuts.
Yeah. Oh, crazy. Well, on my Roku now, whenever I go to Netflix.
Oh, God, if you find it. I know, I hate it. Okay, thank you.
I don't use Netflix anymore.
Yes!
I just watch Amazon Prime.
Why did you do this? So what he's saying, and this is true, as you browse through Netflix, and I don't know if it, I think it only is Roku. I don't see this on other devices, but maybe so. As you browse through it, it starts playing either a trailer or an actual episode of whatever you're looking at.
And it's you can't stop it. There's no way to turn it off.
I looked everywhere. If anybody knows, they will be doing you and me a mitzvah, Mike, because it drives me crazy too. This is not a good user interface feature, Netflix. Please turn it off. You know why they do it. Netflix has really gotten smart about getting you to watch more Netflix. For instance, when you end a show, the next one starts, right? They show the credits, but then the next one will start. And now they've gone the next step, which is auto-playing as soon as you're highlighting it, which makes it very difficult to browse Netflix.
It just makes it really – it's untenable. I just can't use it.
I know what you mean.
And part of it is because I understand they don't want people to be sitting there in silence because nobody can sit in silence.
No one can sit in silence anymore. No siree.
But I just want to read what's going on before I decide what I'm going to watch, you know?
You can disable the next show thing so it doesn't autoplay the next show. But as far as I know, and I have looked, and I'm because this is something relatively new, and it drives me nuts too, Mike. I don't know how to turn that off. If anybody does, please call, text, email, write. Go to the website, put it in the comments. Help us, because this
is to the point where I'm going to unsubscribe because it's just not worth it any longer.
Yeah, we want to turn off.
Crazy.
We want to turn off that background. Sometimes it's a tease. Sometimes it's actually from an episode playing as you're browsing the Netflix guide, looking for the next show to watch. They're just doing it to get you. And I guess you could mute the sound. That's somebody saying that, but you're still going to have that thing playing in the background. And by the way, that means it's downloading it while that's happening, right? So it's using your bandwidth.
Yep.
So I think this is actually something we could write to Netflix and say, dude, knock it off. I only get a terabyte from Comcast, and you're eating my bandwidth.
Absolutely. Yeah. I hope they rethink it. And again, I can't figure out. I understand it's only with Roku, and it's certain Rokus. A friend of mine has an older Roku.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. We may have found the answer thanks to Mike B. in our chat room. This is from the Roku help page. We'll put a link in the show notes. How to turn off Netflix autoplay of currently highlighted show. Basically, go to your Netflix account on the web. And go to account settings, test participation off.
No, tried that, found that, tried it, turned it off. Doesn't make a difference.
You know why? Because this used to be a test, but now it's real.
Right, exactly. Yep, found that one, tried it.
This is from December of last year. And I guess they were testing it, and it tested well. Because now they're doing it.
Well, nobody goes to the website to do anything with those settings anyway half the time. So nobody even knows it exists.
Yeah. I'm going to go to my Netflix page, and I'm going to see if I can find something. Because that is driving me. You know what? It's so funny you should say that because, of course, we're all trying to watch Stranger Things last night. And it's driving me crazy. I don't want to see that. I'm trying to, it's crazy. Thank you, Mike, for bringing that up.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
You too. We're going to play more time songs for you in just a little bit. But right now, it's time to remind you. I bet you even know what I'm going to say. Back up your stuff. With Carbonite. You heard our caller a couple of callers ago saying, I'm not worried. I'm putting a new hard drive in, but I know my data is safe because I have Carbonite. We've been using Carbonite online backup practically since this show began. But now I'm here to tell you, Carbonite is more than just, cloud backup. Carbonite has become the data protection expert for businesses of all sizes. They've acquired companies like the eVault company, which gives them, I love this, an on-premises hard drive that automatically backs up to the Carbonite cloud, so you get the best of both worlds. They have, for business, this is really important. Not so much for us consumers, but getting back online, if you're a business and you're down for even an hour, that's lost sales. So they have what we call high availability solutions that get you back up in seconds. They have, they call it data recovery as a service, DRaaS solutions. I could go on and on, but you know, the new Carbonite page has all the details. Go to carbonite.com. Carbonite has been evolving at an amazing rate. It's practically a new company, but one thing still is true. It was true when we started. It's true today. They are the data protection experts. Nobody knows better how to preserve your vital data than Carbonite. And you know what I say, you got to back it up to get it back. So do it right. Carbonite.com. And especially if you're a business, you want to find out about it. Now let's about this Netflix autoplay. Now this is on the Roku, but do other, like if you have Netflix on an Xbox, does it do that? If you have Netflix on Amazon, Fire TV, does it do that? Does it do it on other devices? Or is Netflix only inflicting this on us on Roku? And Netflix, you should have asked us. I know it was an experiment last year. Now that it's a reality, please stop. Please, please stop. Lately I've been using the Apple. I got the new Apple TV, the 4K, and I've been using that for Netflix. I don't know. I'll have to try it. I don't remember if it does it on there. I know it drives me crazy. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. Toll free in the U.S. and Canada. Give me a ring. Let's talk high tech. More of your calls right after this. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, Netflix, Roku, all that jazz. I don't even mention the TV players, but that's a big topic, isn't it? Apple TV and Roku and Fire TV, Amazon's Fire TV, NVIDIA Shield, Android TV. There's so many ways now you can put content on your TV. We can talk about that too. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. If you watched the World Series, you saw how much, boy, I wonder what YouTube spent on the World Series, because they were all over it, everywhere. They had ads, they had buttons, they had logos, they had placement, even, and it kind of bothered some people, but behind the batter, you know, that little billboard area on the cage behind the batter to protect the fans. They had a YouTube ad. YouTube TV is what they're advertising. YouTube TV ad with a YouTube play button, and it just happened, complete coincidence, to be right in the middle of the screen, right the exact size that a YouTube play button would be. And more than a few people, mostly OCD types like me, said, "Knock it off!" Every time I'm watching the World Series, I want to push the play button. Yeah, that was good. That was some good marketing. They're pushing their. Actually, it's a pretty good deal. I have a $35 cable TV replacement called YouTube TV that gives you live local stations. It has, by the way, the best guide of anybody, any cable company, any set top box. It's a really nice, you know, guide to what's on. And when you hover the mouse, now this is a good use of autoplay. When you hover the mouse over the preview, what's on channel 7 right now? You hover the mouse over it, it starts playing. It doesn't do the audio, but you can see what's going on live. And then you move it up a little, you know, you go up to the next one and you can see. That's really cool. And it's $35. It has DVRs up to 5 different users. Everybody in the family can have their own DVR. I don't mean to be doing an ad for it, but no one needs to. The ad on the World Series, the 30-second ad on the World Series, I think was $500,000 to $600,000. YouTube must have spent conservatively $10 million or more on the World Series advertising. Huge amount. And the interesting thing is, I don't think YouTube makes money for Netflix. I'm sorry, Netflix for Google. Google owns YouTube. I don't think YouTube makes money for Google. Because there's ads all over it. And in fact, you can buy an ad-free version called YouTube Red for, I think, $7 a month. But so they make money, but I don't think they make a profit because, boy, think about it. They're paying all the bandwidth for uploading videos and downloading videos. They've got must have massive servers all over the country. And admittedly, Google probably has relationships with Comcast and other internet service providers. They call them peering. This is kind of the dirty little secret of internet bandwidth. They call them peering arrangements. Comcast says, well, we won't charge you for the bandwidth you use if you don't charge us for the bandwidth we use. And these are a lot of peering arrangements. So a lot of companies that might have huge bandwidth costs don't, because they make a deal with internet service providers. I don't know if YouTube has a peering deal with the big internet service providers. Maybe not. But it's because if you're Comcast, you don't love YouTube TV, right? That's the cord cutter's dream. But of course, Comcast now has realized that there are plenty of people, especially young people, who aren't buying cable television. They're buying cable internet. So they've raised the price of cable internet to the point where they're still making money off of you. They're no fools. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Kurt is on the line from Oshkosh, Wisconsin. Bagosh. Hi, Kurt.
How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. Well, I was freaking out until this morning.
Uh-oh. What was going on?
As I was the last man on earth to join Facebook.
Wait a minute. You joined Facebook, like, recently?
Like, just a couple weeks ago.
Is it too late to tell you, stop? Okay, go ahead.
And I'm 51, so I think I'm good.
You know, Facebook is a love-hate thing for people, because it really does connect you with family and friends that, you know, you probably are going, wow, there's my high school sweetheart. Things like that.
Yeah, I tell you, the only reason I did it was to stay in touch with my son, who's in the military.
Perfect.
So what happened was I just did a few little posts in these last couple weeks to get the hang of it. 2 days ago, I got a couple pictures I wanted to post, so I posted them, and it was working fine. I was being able to negotiate Facebook. Saturday morning, I go to log in, and an odd message came up, said, there's been an unusual amount of activity on your account. Please upload a picture of yourself.
With a driver's license.
It said just a picture of yourself.
A picture? That's all you had to upload? Is a picture?
Yeah.
Facebook sometimes does this, and they want a proof. They want a picture of a ID as well. Interesting.
Okay. So being the virgin Facebooker here, I took a 6 o'clock in the morning selfie of me and hit upload.
I don't know why they would ask for that, actually, because didn't you put a picture in your profile?
It was the picture of my... No, I did not.
Ah.
I didn't get that far yet.
So you just created an account. So understand what Facebook is worried about, and they're more worried about it now, is fake accounts. They're really worried because they're getting dinged by Congress for fake Russian accounts that were, you know, being used to purchase Facebook ads to weigh in on our presidential election. So Facebook's very nervous about these accounts. And the fact that you didn't finish your profile probably was a red flag. Like, oh, this could be a bot. That's what they call a fake account. It could be a bot. So it's funny that all they would ask for is a picture.
Well, so the next thing was, so after I uploaded the picture, the next message came up, says, we're going to log you off while we verify you. In the meantime, you're logged off for security reasons.
Yeah.
Well, that's when I went into a, you know, semi-catatonic, you know, oh my God.
By the way, this is the love-hate thing I was talking about, right? Yeah. You love it because you can stay in touch with your son who's overseas, but you hate it because they own you.
Yeah, exactly. So I didn't do nothing all day but try to keep logging on. And in the meantime, I called you because I thought, I've been listening to this guy for eternity, but I've never...
Finally, a reason to call Leo. Yeah.
Exactly. But I missed you yesterday. So I woke up this morning and thought, I'm going to try one more time. And I logged on like nothing was happening.
Yeah, because they verified you. So this is... this is, in fact, I'm looking at a Facebook page that I will send you. Well, I won't send it to you because I don't have your address, but I'll put it on the website. How about that? TechGuyLabs.com. Yep. That shows what you got, which says, upload a photo of yourself. Please upload a photo of yourself, which clearly shows your face.
Yes.
Now, the privacy concern here is, well, what does that do? And my feeling is they probably have so much face recognition information that they can actually look at that picture and say, oh, yeah, that's Kurt. Remember that one of the things they know is where you're from. So they see, oh, somebody is logged in from Oshkosh, Wisconsin. Kurt says he's from Oshkosh. That's a plus. We've got a picture of Kurt, which we can match to other pictures. Maybe friends uploaded pictures of you and tagged them, things like that.
Yeah.
Oh, it's Kurt. It's not some Russian bot. Okay, we'll let him have an account. So that's all that happened. It's harmless. Now, there is a concern about Facebook, which you should know about, but I have to take a break, so don't go anywhere. I will. When we come back, I'm going to tell you what not to do next time you're on Facebook. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Does anybody really know what time it is? Well, you know, depends if you set your clocks back last night or not. So I was talking to Kurt from Oshkosh about Facebook. Brand new to Facebook. Amazing. Isn't that somebody hasn't? I mean, Facebook has now 2 billion monthly active users. 2 billion. There's only 7 billion humans. And probably there's only maybe 3 billion internet users, something like that. So they've got a good, you know, good sizable portion of the entire internet using community on Facebook. Who doesn't use Facebook, right? And I agree, there's wonderful things that Facebook can let you do, stay in touch with family, friends, community. But I explained to Kurt, be very careful about what you share with Facebook. Think about anything you do with Facebook as putting it out in public. Not only does Facebook have access to it, but every once in a while, the mistakes happen. Private information leaks out of Facebook. They hand it over. I told him, be very careful. For instance, I know you all do this. You take those Facebook quizzes. You know those? Which American president are you? Take the quiz and find out. You're Abraham Lincoln. And then your friends share it. I'm Abraham Lincoln. Or the one, this I know a lot of my friends because they think they're smart. They fall for this one. How good is your spelling or your grammar? How many facts do you know? And so you take, because you want to be smart. And by the way, notice, you're always smart. So you take the quiz. You're smart. Share this with your family and friends. And you do, and it goes viral. But what's really going on? Why are all these quizzes on Facebook? Well, turns out the way Facebook permissions work, that the page that creates the quiz, in order, when you take the quiz, boom, they have access to your information. They become your friend. Not just your friend, your friend's friends. Your friends, they're friends with your friends. There's the friends of friends. They get access to your information and everybody you're following. And it turns out there's a company in England named Cambridge Analytica, which makes a specialty of Facebook quizzes. And they have no interest at all in the quiz. They don't. They couldn't care less. They just want everybody on Facebook to take it because they gather information about you that way. And lots of information, not just where you live and who you are, your age and your marital status, but things like your mood, your interests. And they use those. They sell those to political parties, to advertisers. You can buy the most amazing granular ads on Facebook. I want to buy somebody who's a New England Patriots fan but who lives on the West Coast. And Facebook will sell you those people. You can send, this is actually a useful tip, if you've got a mailing list, if you're a business that has a mailing list and you'd like more people to join your mailing list or use your business, you can give Facebook all the contacts in your mailing list. Facebook matches them to their Facebook accounts and then will give you a new mailing list of people who are very similar but aren't yet on your mailing list. In other words, if somebody cares enough about you to join your mailing list, you'd like more people like that, right? Facebook will provide that to you based on all the stuff they know about people, about the people on your mailing list, people not on your mailing list. And it's, I mean, the fact that Facebook sends out, and it, by the way, Facebook does this, if it thinks you're, you know, a fake account, they'll give you a message that says, we're going to log you out. You've got to send us a photo of yourself, which clearly shows your face. When you send us a photo, we'll check it and then permanently delete it from our servers. Oh, what a relief. They're not going to save it. But what are they checking it for? They must, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but they must know what you look like. Even if you aren't a Facebook member or you're a new member, they know what you look like because your friends share pictures of you and tag them. Who knows? Maybe they bought that big database the federal government has that has almost like some 150 million Americans in it. I mean, that must be how that works. How else would you prove that you're you by just sending them a picture of yourself, a clear picture of your face? How else would they know that? They've got, of course, very good face recognition software. We know that. They automatically recognize people in pictures. They recognize you, even if you're not a member, they recognize you. So just if you're on Facebook, consider what you're sharing on Facebook. And remember that when you take quizzes, when you like pages, when you interact in general on Facebook, you're leaking information. And that there are lots of people, like lots of companies like Cambridge Analytica, that collect that information and use it and sell it. And, you know, okay, you may say, well, big deal, I'm going to get some ads. Well, you're going to get ads that are pretty targeted to you, not merely to where you live and your income and your age and your education level, but they have things called sentiment analysis. Well, you're kind of a sad person. You're a happy person. We're going to make sure the ads target you appropriately. I think that's a little creepy. There's nothing we can do about it at this point. People are starting to sit up and notice. There's a professor at NYU, Scott Galloway, has written a book called The Four that talks about Facebook, Amazon, Apple, and Google, and how they've gotten bigger and bigger, and to the point where they really are effectively monopolies, and they misuse their monopoly power, and most importantly, that people are sitting up and taking notice, and these guys better watch out. Farhad Manju, who writes about technology for the New York Times, calls them the Frightful Five. He adds Microsoft to that group. The Frightful Five. They're getting bigger and more powerful. And the thing that more scares me than that is big data. The thing that's really changed in our society is this thing called big data, where they have lots of data points from all sorts of different sources. Every time you go on the internet, lots of information is being collected about your interests, where you go, what you do, how you move your mouse, what kind of browser you have, all sorts of stuff is being collected. Put every search you do, put into a big database, correlated against other databases, and we now have the processing power and the volume of information that all sorts of interesting things are being learned about people. This big data is something new, something we've never seen before, and it's reached, I think, a critical mass to the point where Facebook, who never met you, Facebook would say, yeah, I just want to make sure it's you, Kurt. Send me a picture. And they know. How do they know? That's big data in action right there. And the fact that they do it openly is kind of amazing. We know it's you. We know what you look like. Send us a picture. We want to make sure it's you. What? Now, I use a lot of technology. I live in this. I'm soaking in it. And I love it. And I don't want to give it up. I think technology is wonderful. It's changed our lives in so many positive ways. But we have to be aware of also the consequences. And I think most importantly, the thing I want to do, I've always wanted to do, is help you have the knowledge about this stuff so you can... you can use it appropriately, defend yourself against this if you choose to understand what's really going on. That's what we really do on this show. 8888 Ask Leo. More calls right after this. That's right, I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's time to talk photography with Chris Marquardt, brought to you by Epson. Preserve what's priceless with the Epson Fast Photo, the world's fastest photo scanner. Fast and easy. Scan thousands of photos as fast as 1 per second at 300 DPI. Restore, save, organize, and share your collection. Here's Chris Marquardt, our photo guy. He's in charge at discoverthetopfloor.com. You'll find all his great, wonderful workshops there for photographers. And, of course, discoverlightroom.com is an amazing Lightroom class. We have to call it the Lightroom Classic training now, because it's the older style Lightroom, not the new style Lightroom. So, Chris, welcome. We talked a couple of weeks ago. We interrupted it with a conversation last week about Lightroom, but a couple of weeks ago, we started talking about travel photography. And as you know, Lisa and I, that's we live for that. For us, vacation means...
You love to
means,
travel and you love to do photography.
Exactly. So you gave me some great tips last time. Of course, the best tip of all, don't buy a new camera the day before you leave.
Of course. we have a choice what to talk about here. I could easily make this into a what not to do segment. Maybe let's start with that.
Okay, what not to do.
Again, what not to do when you travel. Don't buy that new camera just a week before the trip. That's a recipe for disaster, because you will be spending more time trying to find stuff in the menus and what button does what. And you won't get the shots you want. And if you are at a very special location, you might not get there anymore in the future. So do not buy that new camera before the trip. Use the camera you love. I would say almost the same for lenses, but not as they're not as problematic. If you shoot with a new lens, the lenses are easier to handle than new cameras, for sure. Believe it or not, the same is for tripods. Do not buy a new tripod a week before the trip. Especially if you have, like, if you spend a lot on a tripod, the more expensive ones, especially the ones with very advanced tripod heads that have lots of settings to set up, there's a good chance, and I've seen this in person, that you might actually be trying to secure your camera on the tripod and you don't know what this dial does and that dial does. And I've seen that, and the results were not nice. All these things can result in a lot of, I'd say, drama on a tour when you actually want to relax and you're on vacation, but now you get stressed out because you don't know how to, that new thing works. So know your gear, shoot with what you know and what you love, because it will also show in your photos. If you're relaxed, if you know what you're doing, then there's a very good chance that the photos will be better than if you're stressed out when taking them. One more thing that I would try to avoid is all sorts of stuff that is in between you and the photo. And that could be stuff like camera armor, for example. there are these rubber coatings that you can get for cameras. And I've seen too many people struggle with them, because then you have a camera that you might know quite well, but you are trying to figure out how to get to that button that is now behind a rubber flap or something. Your cameras aren't really that delicate. You can... I've really mistreated some cameras, and they've been typically fine. And if you travel, it doesn't mean that you will automatically bang that camera around against things. So if you have it with you,
I don't do it automatically. I do it on purpose.
I mean, that's a different thing.
No, but it does depend where you're going. I mean, you've gone to some pretty harsh conditions, like up there in Spitsbergen.
No, in Spitsbergen, it's just a bit cold, and that's it. And you do not need to put a warm jacket on your camera. Your camera will be fine.
Yeah.
We've been up in the Himalayas hiking at altitude with the cameras, and of course we had the camera attached to the backpack or around our necks or something. Of course we wouldn't throw it against rocks and things. You don't do that.
But you have a lens hood on, so that if it hits the lens hood...
The lens hood is a good protection. Yeah. So just a few things. Do not change the things that you usually do fundamentally just because you travel. That is almost a guarantee that something will go wrong because of that.
It's like getting a new camera. New workflow.
Yeah. Do not change the way you shoot. It doesn't really help you. It makes things different and this way more complicated. So that's kind of the basis. Don't change anything. You'll be fine with what you know. If you take good photos back home, there is no reason you won't take good photos when you're on vacation. Now, of course, if you go to the beach and there's lots of salt water spray in the air and stuff, that might warrant a protective filter. If you are in very specific situations and you know, oh my God, the camera is going to get banged against things, then go protected by all means. But with regular vacations, no, I don't really change anything.
Do you look for sealed cameras or weatherproof cameras? I mean, do you pay attention to that or
no? The one thing that I will have in my pocket and I will have at hand is a microfiber cloth, and not just one of these tiny ones for glasses, but like a kitchen microfiber cloth that you would use to clean dishes with. That's, you buy them in 5 packs for probably $5, and that is the best thing. Take it out of your pocket, wipe off your camera if it gets wet, wipe off dirt if it gets dirty, and then shake that cloth out and it'll dry in no time. That's just, and it won't scratch your lenses if you want to use it for to clean the lens. That's something I always have with me. Even if I'm out in rain, that's how I keep the camera dry, by just wiping it every now and then. So that's kind of the go-to solution there. It's not from a photo store. It's just from a regular grocery store from the household items aisle. So that's cool. And then, of course, when you travel, hey, adjust your gear to what you want to shoot. If you go out for landscapes, bring a tripod, bring your filters, bring your ND filters for long exposures and night skies and things. If you want to shoot people, that's one of the things I love doing in other countries. Try to get pictures of the people, the local people. Now, of course, communication can be a bit of a problem there, especially if you don't speak the language. But a bit of a pointing towards the camera, a bit of a nod is typically enough to figure out if they are okay with the picture being taken. Smile lots. That's one of those things that work almost everywhere. Smile a lot and people will smile back. And just in general, if you get to a place where some action happens, like a festival, for example, I'll be soon in Bhutan. We'll be in areas where there are festivals and people will dance and have fun and stuff. I have seen pictures from people that people took from far away with a long telephoto lens of these things. And I've seen pictures of photographers who put on a wide angle lens and went into the action as close as possible. And guess which of those two kinds of pictures were the ones that were the strong ones, the good ones, the exciting ones, the close up ones, of course.
I'm bringing my wide angle next time.
And I've been in Ethiopia in the middle of a religious festival, a procession, people walking down the streets, hundreds of them dancing. And it was kind of intense, of course, but I went right in the middle, and that's some of the best pictures I've ever taken of people, because it's so real, it's so close, and it worked.
I just have to get my nerve up, that's all.
Well,
because you know, it's a little scary, but get in there, and you know what, you'll have a better experience, because you'll be part of, you won't be a distant observer, you'll be part of the scene, which is, I think, very cool.
And no one there knows you.
No one knows you. You'll be gone soon. Yeah, right. What can they do? We're gonna have to do part 3 next week, okay?
All right.
Because I'm loving these travel tips. You'll find Chris Marquardt at discoverthetopfloor.com. And don't forget, discoverlightroom.com is new Lightroom training. Brought to you by Epson. Preserve what's priceless with the Epson Fast Photo, the world's fastest photo scanner. Fast and easy. Scan thousands of photos as fast as 1 per second at 300 DPI. Restore, save, organize, and share your collection. I am very pleased with so far. Don't know about battery life. That takes a couple of days to really suss out, but so far, very good. I also got the new Apple TV, the new 4K version of the Apple TV. Pretty happy with that. Looks beautiful. There's no point in getting it unless you have a 4K TV. Even better, if you have an HDR TV, it supports HDR, and it looks gorgeous. Oh, and you know what? Apple did a nice thing that I don't think anybody else is doing. If you bought movies or TV shows on iTunes, of course, they show up on your Apple TV. If there are 4K versions, they'll automatically be upgraded. You don't have to pay more to get a 4K version. If there's an HDR 4K version, they'll automatically be upgraded. So I went back through some movies. Deadpool, HDR 4K looks gorgeous. Found a number of movies. Not all of them. Some older movies, there's no 4K version. But the ones that they had, they basically gave it away, which is really nice. Then I got something from Google on Friday. I got my new Google Chromebook, the Pixel Book, and the Pencil. Now, this is another example of something that really is too expensive. Chromebooks should be inexpensive, right? I don't mean $200. They make them, but that's kind of those are kind of cheesy, chintzy Chromebooks. They fall apart. You save money by using low-quality components. So they're not the best screens. They're not the fastest. The trackpads aren't great. The keyboards aren't great. There are some very nice Chromebooks. Samsung makes a couple. This is the Chromebook Pro and the Chromebook Plus that are about $500. HP, Acer, Asus all make $500 aluminum body. Really nice. But Google likes to, I think what they're trying to do is say, look, just because it's a Chrome OS laptop doesn't mean it shouldn't be as nice as any Windows or Mac laptop. But in order to make a laptop like that, they have to charge you. The least expensive one, which is the one I got, is $999. It's $1,000 for a Chromebook. But it is nice. It is very nice, beautiful touch screen. The pen works nicely with it. That's, by the way, an additional $100. The trackpad's very smooth. It's got a nice soft touch panel. If you want, if you like Chromebooks, and I know many of you do, I'm a big fan, especially for school and business places where you don't need a full general purpose computer. For most people, if you spend your life in the browser for banking, for surfing, even for email, then a Chromebook would be a great choice for you. It's much more secure, much more reliable. You probably should get the Samsung Chromebook Plus, to be honest, but if you have $500 extra to spend. Now, remember, I buy these because this is my job. I'm not sure I would spend this money if I didn't have to review this for you, but it is beautiful. It really is nice. They did a very nice, great keyboard. It's a pleasure to use. The only bad thing, well, first of all, it's Type-C ports, one on each side. You could charge or you can use it as a USB port, but you have to get adapters and dongles and things. It does have a headphone microphone jack, standard mini jack, so that's nice, but that's it. No other ports. The other bad thing, the screen has a fairly large bezel. We're in the new era, you know, of no frames on our screen. Not just on phones, but on laptop computers, too. Most laptops now have very narrow bezels. They look great. I love them. I'm very happy with them. Things like the Dell XPS 13 and 15, just they call it the Infinity Display because there's no edge. Not the Google Pixelbook. That's got a big half-inch frame, all black frame all the way around it. They said they had to do that for the Wacom digitizing tablet that's built into that screen so you can use the pen. I find that hard to believe since most phones, which also have digitizers, can go all the way to the edge. But if that's, you know, that's the best they could do, okay. But if you're willing to spend a little more, a lot more, twice as much for a Chromebook, this is the best. There's no question about that. There's one you can beef it up with an Intel i7 processor and 16 gigs of RAM and a big 512 gig hard drive. You can really beef it up. And then it's $1,650. $1,650. Wouldn't recommend that. But the $1,000 version, plenty fast. Runs Android apps beautifully. Really very nice piece of hardware. Nice piece of kit, as my British friends would say. 8888 Ask Leo. Back to the phones. Howard, Mission Viejo, California. Hi, Howard.
Hey, Leo. Love the show.
Thank you for hanging on.
Oh, thank you, thank you. I'm going to buy an iPhone 10 from the Verizon store. I'm sorry, from the Apple store.
Yeah.
And Verizon, my carrier.
Yeah.
And is there only one model radio for Verizon iPhone 10?
Yeah, you'll want, first of all, you have to get it. They're not selling an unlocked version yet of the iPhone 10. Apple's done that before. They may in a few months. But right now, you have to get it for Verizon, Sprint, AT&T, or T-Mobile. And get it for the carrier that you're using. Actually, the Verizon is the best one to get. It has all the radios.
Oh,
so
okay.
You're in luck, actually. Get the Verizon one. You won't really want to get T-Mobile or AT&T. It won't work fully on the Verizon network, but the Verizon network will work on other networks. And Verizon, because they had to make an agreement with the FCC, does not lock the SIM slot on that. So you can put an LTE. There is a SIM slot on the iPhone 10. They use an eSIM, but you could put a SIM from another carrier in there. It's unlocked. So the eSIM.
Well, you said you have to buy it locked, but eventually they'll unlock it?
They're all locked now. Okay. Apple will sell an unlocked version down the road. But you're at the mercy of your carrier as far as unlocking down the road. I don't know what Verizon's policies are. AT&T, for instance, if you're in good standing, the phone is fully paid for, they'll unlock it if you ask them. But I don't know.
Okay, so that's something different then because you could buy an unlocked phone.
Yeah, Apple's gone back and forth on this. There have been iPhone releases where there was no unlocked phone. I think the original, I want to say the 6S, didn't have an unlocked one. And then 6 months down the road, they started selling an unlocked one. I suspect they'll do the same. So right now, though, if you're buying an iPhone 10, you're going to buy it for a carrier. It's going to be locked.
Okay.
But
in time.
But Verizon's weird because they're not allowed to lock the SIM card chip, so you can't. So it's not locked on the Verizon one. In effect,
okay. Because I don't have a contract with them. You know. I'm
yeah.
Not, you know.
Yeah. So the FCC they had a consent decree. FCC went after him. I can't remember what it was for, but they agreed we will not lock the LTE SIM card in our phones. So a Verizon phone is essentially unlocked. This eSIM thing complicates it. You know, when I activated my phone, mine was on T-Mobile. You don't put a SIM in it. You call T-Mobile and they activate it because there's a SIM, a chip that basically simulates a SIM. It's a SIM. And that I don't know how that might complicate the Verizon deal. So that's an interesting question.
Okay.
That's an interesting question. But if there is an unlocked iPhone, it would be the Verizon unlocked iPhone.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Well, I'm coming from an iPhone 4, and I guess I got my money's worth out of that.
So. Brother, you're going to get your money's worth out of this one. This is a wonderful phone. I think it's a great phone, and I think it's time to upgrade.
Yeah. Because after this one, after the 10, my next one will probably be a 20.
Yeah. Based on past experience. Yeah.
Right. Absolutely.
That's good. You wring every bit of juice out of that thing. That's good because it's an expensive phone. You need to.
Right. Thank you, Leo.
My pleasure. Enjoy it. I think you're going to love it. I don't know what the stock situation is right now in Verizon stores. I don't know if you can walk in and get one. If you order online, it's going to take you 6 weeks. Our show today brought to you by, I love these folks, the good folks at Carbonite. They do online backup right We've talked about them for years. I've been using them for years. You know, it's one of those things, you set it and forget it. You buy it on a Carbonite plan, it lasts a year. You don't even have to think about it. Whenever you're online, your data is being backed up. But I want to emphasize, Carbonite has really evolved. They have become the data protection experts for all users, not just home users, business of any size, small, medium, giant enterprises. They have solutions. They've acquired companies like eVault and DoubleTake that make them even better. They have high availability solutions that get you back to business in seconds. They have a wonderful solution for avoiding cloud lock-in. So you can have multiple cloud services. You can move from one to the other. You're never locked in. Carbonite's amazing. They've really expanded their offering. But it all comes down to one thing, protecting your precious data. And if your business uses computers, there's data on those computers you can't do business without. That's why you have to have a good backup strategy. Nobody better. Go see the new Carbonite website. Lots of resources there. Lots of information about all their new products. Carbonite.com. C-A-R-B-O-N-I-T-E.com. It's not your grandpa's Carbonite. It's not even your father's Carbonite. Probably even your uncle's Carbonite. It is your brother's Carbonite. This is the all-new, beautiful thing, Carbonite. You got to back it up to get it back. Do it right. The data protection experts, Carbonite.com. News at the top of the hour. Coming up next, we'll take a little break, answer more of your calls. No lines are open, but when they come open, 8888 Ask Leo. Website, TechGuyLabs.com. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and iPhone 10 and iPhone 8, 7654. I won't go past the 4. 8888 Ask Leo, smartwatches, augmented reality, 888-827-5536. Anything with a chip in it, I would like to talk to you about it. Give us a ring. We're getting some great information here, answering some questions, having fun. And of course, if you wish, you can also join us in the chat room. We have a chat room. We also have a live video feed if you like to see behind the scenes, that kind of thing. All of that's available at our website, techguylabs.com. That's free. No sign up. Don't take your email address. You can leave comments there. Everything I talk about is linked there. Audio and video from the show after the fact, techguylabs.com. Terrell is in White House, Tennessee. Hello, Terrell.
Yeah, it's Terrell, actually.
Terrell.
How are you doing?
I'm very well. How are you?
Good. Doing great. So I wanted to talk to you about a battery pack. I'm totally blind, and I want to talk to you about a battery pack that I had heard about but had never seen until Friday. One of my friends who listens to your show quite a bit showed it to me. But it's a gentleman by the name of Brent Harbolt, and he's the Harbolt Company is his company, and he sells this battery. It's a 15,000 milliamp battery, but what's unique about it is there's a button on top of it, and it will beep, and for every beep, that symbolizes 25. Percentage points.
Oh, that's great.
Of charge.
So it's an accessible battery pack so that you, if you can't see the lights, you can at least hear the beep.
Right. And it vibrates too. And you can put it into vibration mode. It's got two USB-C ports and then a micro USB port in the middle for charging the pack.
I love that idea. H-A-R-B-O-L-T.
And HarboltCompany.com is
HarboltCompany.com,
the website.
HarboltCompany.com, specializing in, it says computer and electronics at a great price, but that's nice that they also make accessible stuff. That's really great.
Well, the owner is actually blind as well.
Perfect.
And it's like $89, but honestly, I mean, I ordered one Friday, and for $89, it's not, you know, I'm willing to pay that price for
just
that.
So you can use it. I mean, otherwise you're guessing how much battery's been used.
Well, you know, and it's kind of funny because the American Council of Blind, who I'm a member of, they have a pack. It's 11,000 milliamps, but it doesn't talk. It doesn't beep.
It's kind of funny, actually.
Yeah, I can. Anybody can make a battery pack that doesn't have any accessibility features.
Right,
this is
right.
Fantastic.
And, you know, and that's the thing is that I've been hesitant to buy one because of, you know, I don't know if it will automatically shut off. I mean, this one.
But you feel like it's good. It does the job. You know what I love? It has the USB ports, you might have mentioned this, are reversible, which means you don't have to get it in right the first time. It'll work either direction. I love that.
Right. Yeah. It's really neat. So, you know, if just to play with or whatever, maybe you can order one or something like that.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to take your word for it. One of the problems, of course, I have reviewing accessibility stuff, especially for people with vision impairments, is I don't get the same experience. So I rely on you and other listeners, and we have quite a few blind listeners, to help me and tell me what works. And in fact, yesterday we had somebody call and talk about accessibility on the iPhone 10, and he was very impressed. He's an Android user, but he tried it. He was very impressed with how easy it was to get the iPhone 10, even though it doesn't have a home button anymore.
I still have my 6 because of the headphone jack.
That's a big one for me, too. I agree. Yeah.
You know, and I hope that the 6 models will be around for a while.
Apple continues to sell 6S, 7, 8, and the 10. They have now, plus the 5, plus the SE, which is essentially a 5S. So they have quite a few models out there, and I agree with you. I will be very sad when the last of the headphone jack models come out. I don't understand why Apple did that. There's no compelling reason. They claim they need the space, but look at the Galaxy S8. It's got a headphone jack. It's got all the capabilities of the iPhone, including it's waterproof, and it still has a head. So I don't understand why Apple is so constrained. Why Apple can Samsung do it, but you can't? I don't understand that.
Right. Now, you mentioned something yesterday on your show, and I wasn't quite clear on another topic, but you mentioned a service called Spreaker.
Yes.
What exactly is that?
Spreaker. And a friend of mine, Rob Greenlee, works there. I've known Rob forever. He was an original podcaster, went to work for Microsoft, helped them get their podcast products together. Now he works over at Spreaker. And it is a service that lets you make a podcast. You can record your podcasts using the Spreaker app. You can listen to podcasts. And Spreaker helps podcast creators distribute them and monetize them. So it's kind of an all-in-one platform. It isn't free. You pay, although they have a free tier that gives you 15 minutes of broadcast and 5 hours of audio storage, 15 minutes a day. But most people who are podcasters will end up spending 6 or 20 or even more dollars a month for their full-featured solutions. I think it's one of many platforms like this, but I know Rob well, and I like him. I like the Spreaker guys. So this is one of many choices. If you wanted to podcast, this makes it very easy to start your own podcast and do it with I don't think you even need – I think you can do it with your phone. You don't even need a special microphone or anything. Just do a podcast with your smartphone. Really nice solution. Hey, Terrell, thank you very much for calling. I appreciate it. It was very nice to talk to you. Moving on to Omar in La Mirada, California. Hello, Omar.
How you doing, Leo?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. I had a question. We own our a business that's open 24 hours, and we have, 40, 50 lines.
Wow.
Different phone numbers that come in.
Holy cow.
And we have a problem with a crank caller. And he's been doing this for the last 2 years. We've called the police, called the phone company. We don't use a traditional phone company, like, you know, Verizon.
He's a digital service, probably.
Yeah, I think it's called Telepacific.
That's funny. We use Telepacific for this call is on a Telepacific line. How funny. They're fiber optic. They're really interesting what they're doing. They can't block that caller?
The thing is he's spoofing his number.
Yeah.
And the way he's doing it is baffles me because he, the second you hang up, he calls right back.
Oh, I'm
same
so sorry.
Type of area code.
Yeah.
the last four digits are different, yep. And it's immediate.
We call that neighbor spoofing, and lots of telemarketers are doing it. It's illegal. Good luck catching him. It is illegal what he's doing. He's spoofing the area code in exchange of your phone, which means you're a business, so you're going to answer the phone anyway, but it works with individuals. And this is, unfortunately, the internet has made harassment easier than ever.
Oh, and what he's doing is, it's not just calling. He's calling you and recording you and he's playing movies.
It's just obnoxious. You're going to have to work with...
He plays back.
Yeah, I understand. Believe me, I know about all of this stuff because I get it too. You're going to have to work with your carrier. The only people who can block it is your carrier. But the problem is, it's really easy to spoof phone numbers. They're meaningless. The caller ID is meaningless now. Maybe Telepacific has a better way to do it. I would ask them. They're the only people who can help at this point. KFI AM 640... Yes, we do. Well, you better let him out and hang up. And then, later generations perfected that and got a little more rude and a little more obnoxious. But, man, it is out of control these days. And it's not just telephones. It's over social networks. It's over the internet. Because the tools to do this are widely available. They're free or cheap, mostly free. The information's out there. There are YouTube channels on how to do this. Now, what I did tell Omar is you can get that YouTube channel pulled down. Just go to Google. They'll pull that down. If they're advocating any kind of illegal activity. But it's hard to get law enforcement involved because it's a prank. And until you're, there's a threat, they're probably just going to say, well, I'm sorry that's happening, but we've got more important things to do. And they do. Sure is disruptive to your business, I understand. It's disruptive to your emotional health. It's something we see all the time now. Trolling is epidemic on the internet. It's happening on Twitter. It's happening on your phone lines, the robocalls. I don't know what the answer is to it. It's just a mess. I don't know. I don't have a solution. I wish I did. Except that, one of the reasons I don't like to talk about it is because it encourages it when you talk about it. If they know they're getting to you, that's what these kids get off on. They get off on the negative energy, and that's why we call them trolls. They're like the trolls. They live under the bridge, and they get off on upsetting people. Trolling is something that's been around as long as it's been the internet, but it's gotten much more effective thanks to technology. And the best advice I can give you is just ignore it. hope you'll find a new victim and move on. Certainly, the less satisfaction he gets out of you, the less likely to spend time. Tom on the line from Riverside, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Leo.
Hey, what can I do for you?
I have an eighth grade granddaughter who is interested in photo and video editing. We're looking at Photoshop Elements and Premiere. Is that the way to go to get started?
It's certainly an excellent choice. Photoshop Elements is almost everything that's in Photoshop, but with a nice, easy-to-use user interface, and it's under $100. Because the real Photoshop's a lot more expensive than that. So, yeah, I think Photoshop Elements is good. Is she taking her own pictures?
She is, yes.
And she does it on a camera phone or with a camera, or what's she using?
She's looking at a Canon EOS Rebel T6.
Beautiful choice. Highly recommend that choice. So that'll take digital photos, and then she'll import them into her computer. Is it a Mac or a PC?
It's going to be a PC, and that's what I was curious about. The system requirements are very modest for this program, but I'm not sure that would be enough computer to do the job. What does it take?
No, it doesn't take much. It doesn't take much. Processor's irrelevant. I mean, worst case, she has to wait a little longer, but she's a kid. She's got lots of time. I mean seconds longer. I don't mean days. I mean seconds longer. It's not a big deal. It might be a little slow compared to the top of the line. Memory is probably the most important thing. Get 8 gigs of RAM at least. Storage, of course, if she's going to put a lot of photos on there, she'll start to use up the hard drive. But you can always get external hard drives, move stuff around. I'll tell you another program I would look at that is a little easier to use, a little bit easier on the budget, from a company called MacFun, PHUN. They call it Luminar. And I actually think this might be a better choice for her. It's Windows and Mac. than Photoshop Elements, because it has some fairly hefty capabilities built in. MacFun is going after Adobe, and I'll tell you why. Adobe's moving to a subscription model. They don't want people to be able to buy outright software. They want you to pay a monthly fee. Photoshop Elements is the last holdout on this, by the way. So, but Luminar realizes, hey, this is an opportunity for us. So MacFun, MacFun.com. The program is called Luminar, L-U-M-I-N-A-R, and it is a fantastic photo editing program that has all the kinds of tools. You know, I would have recommended, frankly, Lightroom, which is what most photographers use for post-processing, but they've moved to a subscription model, and it's $10 a month, and at some point it just starts to really add up. So Luminar, which I think is $69, is a very nice choice. It does support all the Adobe Photoshop and Lightroom plugins, so you're not gonna miss out. And I think she'll like it. She's probably coming from Instagram, where she's used to filters. That's usually how kids start now. They start doing Instagram pictures. They apply filters. They go, wow, this is great. So they have that similar kind of filter-based interface. But as you get more proficient, and she will, she'll be able to find underlying the filters all the sliders and tools and layers and channels that make a big difference. So I would highly recommend Luminar. It has a great little tool now, the Super Heal tool, will come out in the 2018 version that lets you eliminate people from your pictures.
Now, Leo, does it make sense we're going to get her a new laptop? Should we get something with a video card and dedicated video?
Nope. Not unless she's a gamer.
Okay, perfect.
Yep.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. I think that this is actually my new favorite tool. There are other companies, too, that see an opportunity in what Adobe's done. Adobe has really annoyed a lot of professionals. A lot of professionals are looking elsewhere. Serif, which makes a very nice program, another one to look at, called Affinity Photo on an iPad program, but they also make PC and Mac tools. They're also going after now, all of a sudden, Adobe, because they see an opportunity in the marketplace. That's good. The competition is very good. Adobe's owned this for far too long. They've been complacent for far too long. And now they're getting greedy, in my opinion. So here's an opportunity to support a small company. They're out of Ukraine, MacFun. I think they're going to change their name, too, because it's not now that they have Windows products as well as Mac products. Somebody in the chat room is making an excellent point. If you, sort of an excellent point. You should use Photoshop if you're learning how to do editing, because that's what you're going to use professionally. Yeah, but maybe not, you know, so she's what? She'd be in the workplace in no less than 6 to 8 years, right, after college. You think Photoshop will be the thing in 6 to 8 years? I don't think so. And the skills you learn, and once you understand color channels, layers, histograms, those skills translate very well. I don't think it matters at all at this point, especially if you're just starting out, if you learn Photoshop. Get a less expensive program that has great capabilities and a modern user interface. Photoshop really isn't the premier tool for photo editing anyway. Most professionals use Lightroom and then Photoshop if they need it. And I think the Lightroom interface is antiquated. Adobe thinks so. They've completely rewritten it. MacFun.com, Luminar. That's my new favorite. I'm thinking of moving over to it myself. And I own all the Adobe stuff. 8888 Ask Leo. Disagree? Give me a ring or visit our website, techguylabs.com, and leave a comment. Hardest working man in showbiz, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I can't go on. You know, maybe I'll do that at the end of the show. James Brown used to do that. I'll never forget seeing him. At the end of the show, he's so tired. He's on his knees. He's so tired. He's worked so hard. He says, I can't go on. And they bring out the cape and they put the cape on his shoulders and they start walking him out. His band is they're walking because he's so tired. And then he says, "I have to go on," and he continues to play. It's I'm going to do that on the show from now on. I can't go on. 88 88 88. Ask Leo the phone number. Let's go to Cheektowaga, New York, and Joe. He's on the line. Hi, Joe.
Hi. Unfortunately, I have a kind of sad story for you.
Oh dear.
Well, my Nexus 7, it was seemed to be running slow, so I rebooted it, figuring there was some process there in the background, chewing CPU and all that. And instead of my custom boot animation, the default boot animation comes up, and I go, oh, no.
Well, wait a minute, but the tablet still works, right? It's just that the boot animation's changed.
Oh, no. It never finished booting.
That's not a good sign.
So, yeah, you know, I go into fast boot mode, and I said, well, let's flash the factory firmware. Well, it took 10 minutes to download / system, and it took 2 hours before I figured out it never finished. So I think the flash is shot on it.
It may be. I mean, it's, you know, by the way, I love this tablet. I have a Nexus. I bought the first Nexus 7. This is the second generation. But it is, what, now 4 or 5 years old?
Yeah, this is the first generation, 2012.
Yeah, so. 7-inch tablet. And I use it, actually, I use it every day on the radio show, and I hope to God it doesn't die on me, because I love this thing. But Google stopped making them, of course.
So I'm kind of in the market for a new tablet. I was kind of looking at the Lenovo Tab 4 8, which is an 8-inch tablet. But yeah.
I wonder, is anybody making a 7-inch anymore?
Actually, Lenovo does, but it looks like a cheaper 7-inch tablet. And I don't know. I was like, I'm looking in like maybe $130 range. If you had any, I was looking at that. And the Asus ZenPad.
I love the Asus. I would over the Lenovo. I would pick that. I don't know if Samsung. I mean, Samsung's kind of the last man standing in terms of high-end Android tablets. You know, this is a dying category. Even Google doesn't make one anymore. I mean, it's. I don't know why. I guess because the phones have gotten big enough, nobody's buying the tablets.
Well, that's what I was thinking. Everybody's buying phablets these days.
Yeah, phablets. That's what we call them, phone tablets. And when you can get a phablet that's 6 inches, what do you need a 7-inch tablet for anymore, right?
So you find many problems with the Lenovo products, though?
I use the Lenovo high-end products all the time, the ThinkPads. But I have not had great experiences with the low-end stuff. But I got to tell you, any tablet you buy for under $200... Even this Nexus 7 was more than $200, not much more, but anything you buy under $200, you're taking a little bit of a chance with. I mean, that is such a low cost, they're going to have to cut corners in all sorts of ways.
Just not in the budget for much more.
I completely understand. I'm not against Lenovo, no. I think they're fine. I don't have anything but anecdotal reports one way or the other. I know I like Asus as a company. I like their hardware, and I like their low-end hardware a little better than the low-end Lenovo hardware, I guess.
Yeah, okay.
So,
well, thank you for your advice.
If you have the choice, the Asus seems to do what you want. If you can go to a Best Buy or somewhere that sells and play with it a little bit, the real thing that they give up at that price point is the screen. You're just not going to get a great-looking screen. Now, that may not bother you. That's why I want you to, if you can find it, try it, look at it. In the store, if they'd let you take it out in the daylight, that'd be nice. But take a look at that screen, touch it, see if it's responsive enough for you, because that's the first thing that goes when they cut the price to that point. They're going to get kind of low end screens. The rest of the stuff is probably very similar. The processors, the RAM, and all that stuff. Anybody has some experience with inexpensive Android tablets, let me know. You really do want to make sure, one thing you want to make sure, one problem, of course, Google wasn't updating the Nexus 7 anymore. You want to make sure if you get anything with Android that it is being updated currently. Doesn't mean it has to be Oreo, the latest version of Android, but it should be at least Nougat, Android 7. And the most important thing is go into the About section and look at what security patch level you have. Because Google now does monthly security patches. And those are very, very important. They fix a lot of flaws, like the latest crack flaw, which is a serious flaw. Now I'm looking at my Nexus 7. It's running Android 6, too old, and its last security patch was August of last year. So I would probably not want to take this tablet on the internet. I don't use it that way. I use it, it's actually a clock, basically, that times the radio segment, so I know when I need to break and so forth. It's a little custom program I wrote, and that works great, and the screen looks great. But if Google's not keeping it up to date, that's bad. So check Make sure the Asus comes with at least Nougat Android 7, or the Lenovo comes at least with Android 7. A lot of these cheap tablets won't. And you want to, gosh, you hope that it'll have the latest security patch. The crack patch is, I believe, coming out soon, the November patch. The problem is these inexpensive tablets, there's no incentive for them to upgrade them. And that's a problem, frankly. Joe, thank you, Joe. Now John in Eastern Long Island. Hi, John.
Hey, Leo. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Question for you. I had an iPhone 6 Plus that developed touchscreen disease. Apple placed it for $350, and about another 8 months after that, their replacement failed on me. I did back it up to my laptop with the manual, you know, manually backed it up. And then I got an 8 Plus in the interim. I just wanted to get the 6 and use it to fly my DJI Mavic Pro drone. So it was going to be a very expensive navigational screen.
Yes.
When I went to go restore the software from my laptop, I discovered that it was pulling the applications from the App Store.
Yes.
And they had a version on the App Store I wasn't crazy about. A lot of people had reported it was crashing drones and you get flyaways.
Well, you'll get updates. In fact, DJI has just updated the DJI Go 4, I think it's called, app. So you will get updates. The theory on the restore is not, and that's why it's pulling it from the internet. It doesn't restore to the same version you had on the previous device. It just says, oh, you had the DJI software on here, so let's go out and get the newest one. So you should get not a restore of the old version, but the new version. And if you're
wanted the version because it was also not as heavily geofenced. I'm also a commercial pilot.
Yeah, the geofencing is in response, of course, to irresponsible drone use by others.
So many. You can just turn on YouTube.
Yeah, if you're a pilot, you know what a problem this is.
Right. But then I've got to go through the part 107 and unlocking every time you want to do something spur of the moment. Yeah. It's very time-consuming, and then your shot is lost.
Yep.
I keep my drone with me all the time. So the beauty of having the older, less geofence software.
I see. So you want an older version, not the new version.
I have my iPhone 6 Plus that I've now since had given back, and Apple replaced it. They upgraded me to a 6S Plus.
Yep.
Apparently, you can't just get a 6 Plus any longer.
Right.
So I also did. I was told, and I said, okay, that sounds plausible, that if you do an encrypted backup to your laptop.
No, it doesn't back up the old versions, just the passwords and data.
Darn.
You still get the new version. Let me think about this, because it may be, in fact, DJI won't offer it because they don't want to, because they, you know, they feel like that geofencing is very important to keep people from using drones near airports and other public places where it would be a big hazard. Let me see where we can figure this out. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.